Banking Matters. I'm your host, Lindsay Hughley, and joining me today is Mauricio Leandro. Mauricio is a seasoned BSA and AML compliance executive with over a decade of experience in banking, fintech, and wealth management. Currently serving as the BSA officer at Capital Community Bank in Utah, Mauricio brings a proven track record of designing and leading enterprise-wide financial crime prevention programs. He has successfully implemented risk-based transaction monitoring frameworks and led vendor evaluations for AML platforms. He has successfully guided institutions through multiple regulatory exams and independent audits, providing critical documentation, managing inquiries, and implementing corrective action plans to address complex findings. A certified anti-money laundering specialist, Mauricio has held leadership roles at Deserv, Safra National Bank, Apple Bank, and JP Morgan, where he consistently delivered measurable improvements in compliance efficiency, onboarding processes, and risk mitigation. Fluent in English, Portuguese, and Spanish, he is known for his cross-functional leadership, regulatory expertise, and commitment to building strong cultures of compliance. Welcome, Mauricio.
Yeah, thanks, Lindsay. Thanks for the intro.
Yeah, of course. This conversation today is really going to be something that's so great. But first, here at Banking Matters, we always like to hear how our guests got their start in financial institutions.
It was something completely unplanned. My first plans were to work at a different sector. I was volunteering at the UN, political science and economics were my background at the time. At the time, JP Morgan made me an offer to come work for them. The UN made a counter offer, but their offer was for a contract position. And again, I didn't have any particular interest in finance, but we had a new baby and went with JP Morgan's offer. And then from there, I just took a liking of it. There were a lot of my skills that I could employ there. And since then, I never left. Just changed functions within finance in general. But that's how I started. Just kind of stumbled upon it, just got an offer at the right time. So.
Yeah, I do feel like that has been the common thread with so many of our guests is that it's all kind of happenstance. But when you fall into it and you love it and you thrive in it, it's really, really, really hard to ever leave, in my opinion.
Yep, correct. And it's you know, you develop a set of skills as well that become kind of narrow and niche, and there's a need in certain spaces or so. So, you know, it's hard to leave after that. Definitely. I've seen quite a few stories of the same stories with something with people with architecture backgrounds or English majors that just ended up in compliance or finance. So it happens. Yep.
There are a vast amount of different backgrounds that the roads all lead to compliance, so it seems. Mm-hmm. But today, so I would really like to hash through. So the BSA regulation requires the board to appoint a qualified BSA officer. And so what is your opinion after your experience and what you've just seen in your career? What is your opinion on the characteristics that make a good BSA officer?
Yeah. Okay. No, fair question. Broad question too. Yeah. So my experience being with quite a few different financial institutions offering different products, different audience completely. There are obviously a BSA officer means a different thing in each of these different institutions. One skill set that's important is a BSA officer must understand the program in and out. BSA officer is going to be the main point of contact. Typically, the BSA officer is somebody that reports to the board, that interacts with auditors and examiners, and it's somebody that has to know everything downstream and upstream, right? And so the depth of knowledge that that individual has of that particular program is critical, okay? Obviously, years of experience may matter or not, depending on the institution, but I just say that the main one is depth of knowledge, right?
And so when you're talking about depth, do you think that mainly comes from a spending time with that one institution, or over time, is that something that you can kind of mix between different institutions as well to create to reach that depth faster?
It could go both ways. Sure. Yeah. So an insider becoming a BSA officer does have a certain vantage point, the advantage, I guess, that, yeah, so they understand how the processes work internally. They understand how what has changed, what hasn't. They understand the capacity or the quality of the staff, right? But somebody from the outside may bring a different perspective, that they know different products, right? They're used to, I'll tell about my experience, right? Coming to CC Bank, previous BSA officer, did not have much knowledge about how business as a service worked, right? And so that's what they brought me in. I was an outsider, had to understand exactly how things worked internally, but I brought that experience that somebody else didn't have. But I've seen the opposite, right? I've seen where somebody's promoted from within, because that person did have the depth and the history there, and they just had to do some catch up in terms of new products or things of that nature. It can really go both ways, with the type of experience that you have on a BSA officer. But just to add to that, I think in addition, it's just, I think the regulation does talk about the individual, the BSA officer, but in reality, when it's boots on the ground, and even with the examiner's expectation, it really goes beyond just the individual, right? The individual does have a lot of leverage because they are the point of contact. However, the strength of the BSA program and that particular pillar, it goes beyond just that, right? So there are more aspects to it that are important to explore, to make sure that they're in place, not only the individual BSA officer.
Absolutely. And so that's a great segue into my next question. What are some of the hallmarks of a program that is ran by a qualified BSA officer? So you're talking about with those other characteristics, how are those going to come to light throughout the work of the program?
Right. Yeah, no, good question. So some of these, one is the staff, right? Who's supporting that program? BSA officer, the responsibilities are going to vary depending on the institution. The level of knowledge that they have of every single step will vary, right? At my time at JP Morgan, obviously, the BSA officer probably didn't know me by name because we were like many levels removed. But here I know that my entire team, because we're like six or seven, people, right? And so the trusting and knowing who the support team is, who are the people that are actually doing the investigations, who are the people that are actually doing customer due diligence, collecting customer information, and so forth, right? Those individuals have to be, there has to be a strong culture supporting the BSA officer, right? That's one aspect. Second aspect is the type of support that's given to the BSA officer to implement the program, right? So the BSA program is the board's responsibility ultimately, but they're not the ones that are overseeing. It's going to be the BSA officer, but they have to give that individual support and autonomy to develop that program, right? And the resources that are made available are critical. So and by resources, it could be obviously human resources, right? How many, the size of staff, the quality of staff, right? And but also in terms of technology, right? Depending on the financial institution, you will have to have a transaction monitoring platform, case management platform. What do you have? Is it something that's tailored to your institution? Is it something that was chosen just because it's been a legacy that the banks used for the last 10 years, and we just want to keep that? They have a good relationship with that vendor, right? So maybe it's not necessarily tailored to your program. So having the BSA officer and the team make an assessment of those resources and then look for new resources, that's critical. So the technology training as well, right? The board must be willing to support the program with training, and we're talking about certifications. We're talking about there are plenty of other trainings that are available. Some of them have a cost, right? So a supportive board, a supportive executive management will give that kind of support to the program, and sometimes it does mean shelling out a few more dollars than they did before. So
Absolutely. And so you mentioned a culture of compliance. Do you have any specific examples of moments throughout your career where you've really felt that executive management has embodied that, or maybe some things that you have gotten feedback on that have really just added to that culture of compliance?
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. I've seen both ends. So here at TC Bank, it is a good example. I'm glad that the story of my story didn't go backwards. It went forward, right? So the board is very supportive. I present to the board every month. I have that kind of autonomy, present the program, present trainings. The board is supportive. They actually know me by name. They know exactly what the program, what's happening in the program in terms of updates. They ask questions. This is a good sign that the board is engaged, that they understand the importance of the ML program. They may challenge from time to time, make recommendations. I encourage them to do that. So there's that feedback. I think that's kind of like the ideal situation. And I've seen the contrary, right? I've seen the opposite, where depending on the economic cycle, for example, and that's very common, compliance is considered just a cost center, right? And so if there's anything that needs to be cut, why not cut compliance, right? Why not cut staff and compliance because they're not generating any revenue? In fact, I talked to an individual just yesterday, and the firm that he worked for previously just completely cut off their compliance staff. They went with a third party, right? And which, again, cost cutting, right? It's a dicey decision to make, but it shows that, you know, at the time of need, compliance was down, their importance was downplayed. Who knows whether that's going to pan out well or not. But typically that is something, right? Depending on the cycle, compliance is just treated like that. Again, the importance is not there. On the other hand, right, sometimes a financial institution has that culture, but at some point something breaks, right? And then they need to come and beef up their compliance staff. That's how I went from just finance into the world of compliance, KYC and AML and so forth. The bank that I was working for at the time was under some kind of type of enforcement action. And part of it was to, again, improve and grow their compliance staff, right? And so with the team that when I joined that team, they had maybe 25 individuals there total. And by the time I left, they had maybe over 150 or so. That was like 3 or 4 years later. So sometimes it's just that culture of the financial institution is forced to adopt a new culture towards compliance. Yeah,
absolutely. And we've seen that a lot over the last few years, especially like VCO side, we get brought in to help, hopefully. And my goal is always to add that culture of compliance with the banks that I get to work with, because to me, it is so important. But I understand from a business model standpoint that compliance is sometimes it is just a bucket that you throw money into. And so it is hard to maintain that communication of compliance and their need for it from the top all the way down to the bottom. Does your department do anything to kind of foster that rapport with your frontline people, your lending staff? What things do you do to kind of keep that flow going from your office to all the way to the front line? Because honestly, they are so important to BSA.
That's a good point. Yeah. So that interaction between the board and the team is one thing, but the interaction with the front office or front office personnel is another aspect of it for sure. Yeah. So one thing, but we're here, we're fairly small. So one of the things that we can do is offer tailored training. And when possible, we do that in person, right? So they know us by name. They know our faces. They know that we make ourselves available to them. If you need any more training, we're going to come in and do that with you. If you have any questions, this is my mailbox. Ping me, right? You make yourself available. And then when they do have questions, and questions will arise, right? Rather than being constrained and shy about asking questions and just, err on the side of making a poor decision, they will reach out, right? And we do have that here at the bank. They do people reach out, and we do have enough staff that we can be fending off questions like this versus, right, the silo mentality, which, again, maybe compliance is completely removed, right? You're been that before as well, right? You have this different buildings, different departments. The hierarchy is completely different. So compliance does feel like this faraway world that you may not want to interact with, right? Because it's just the people that are going to say no for everything that you do. So maybe you're not encouraged to ask questions. So having that personal, well, as close as personal relationship as you can have, right, with the front office is one thing. Just being personal, right? If you understand what they're going through, right? If you're somebody that maybe worked at that position before, right, that you've interacted with customers before, then you may understand, well, I know how it is to be in their shoes. I'm going to right size my ask, or I'm going to give this type of support because they're going to need that, right? Versus saying my way or the highway, right? Sometimes it's just easy for compliance personnel to do that. That also fosters a poor culture of interaction, of partnership with front office. It's the ego that some compliance professionals may develop over time.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always, and anybody that I've ever worked with, I've always tried to make sure that they understand how, like, I can't do my job as a BSA officer without buy-in from frontline. Like, you guys are my boots on the ground. You're who are with our customers every day, talking to them face-to-face. Like, they will make or break to me sometimes a BSA program and the success of it, because you can put as many procedures in place, you can have the best software, but honestly, if your frontline's not willing to do those steps that are required of them, and like you said, to be comfortable to ask those questions. So yeah. Super duper important in my opinion.
And sometimes it's just a matter of you have a certain background, you know exactly what has to be done. And I've seen compliance officers that simply assume that the front office knows that, right? Just because you have a published policy up there, the 30 to 40 page document, it doesn't mean that they're going to go over that. We don't go over every single terms that we accept throughout the day when we download apps, right? So why would they read the entirety of it? So a lot of times it's good to have that personal relationship and kind of understand, well, they may not understand exactly the depth of it. Let's answer those questions as they arise and let's level set, right? Let's not assume things. Again, goes a long way. You create a better compliance culture. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you're thinking about safeguarding the financial institution, the customers, right? The end result is not necessarily what's best for you, which may be just dismissing things or not being personable. It may be giving that extra effort or walking that extra mile to answer questions the best possible way so that they are accomplished what they're supposed to do. You don't have to answer uncomfortable questions in the future, right? So it may take a little extra time here, but it's going to save WSA officer in the financial institution a lot of time and resource and money possibly in the future, right?
Thank you so much, Mauricio. And for the rest of our listeners, that's Banking Matters.